You better come on in my kitchen. There's hard to be raining out of.
Come over here, kid. Wait a second. You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of water. And you fry some garlic.
It's
and you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You got it to a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? And a little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce. Potatoes,
yeah. I eat with gusto, damn your bet, my country, 'tis of thee. I eat for social progress, I eat for victory.
Delicious. Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the one country's most delicious hour. I'm Michelle Anna Jordan, believe it or not, regardless of my voice. It really is me, I promise. Last show of 2008, the year that flew by and dragged on endlessly. One more paradoxical years I think we've all been through. We've got a great show tonight talking about a favorite subject for people in the North Bay, one of my favorite subjects, one of my favorite indulgences. Sometime every year between Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve, I head out to Bodega Bay, to, I think it's Bay Flat Road. I find somebody who's going to sell me fresh, live, kicking Dungeness crab, and I take them home and drop them head first into a pot of boiling salted water, chill them down, crack them open, and while I'm waiting for them to chill, I make my absolutely fabulous Louis dressing. It is the best in the world. And yes, you can send me an email and I will send you a copy of the recipe if you like. But it is something I've been doing since I was a little girl. I remember going to Fisherman's Wharf for the first time when I was, I think, 3. And I always went for Dungeness crab. Anyway, we have Tony Anello here. He and Carol Anello have Spud Point Crab Shack. And Tony fishes on the boat, the Annabelle, which I have noticed for many, many years because my first cat as an adult, as Mia as an adult, was named Annabelle Lee. So I saw Annabelle, thought, oh, it makes me think of my cat. So I'd always wondered who owned the Annabelle, and then I found out, Tony, it was you. Welcome to Mouthful.
Well, thank you, Michelle. Yeah, the Annabelle has quite a history. She was owned by one of the most popular fishermen out of Bodega Bay. And I always ask that gentleman, if when it's time that you want to sell the boat, please let me know. And it was a gentleman by the name of Earl Carpenter, a real steward of the industry of Dungeness crab fishery and salmon. And the boat always appealed to me. One day he walked into our shop and said, I'm ready to sell. So we made a nice deal, and here I have the Annabelle now.
What was that, about 10 years ago?
About 10, 12 years ago. Yeah, I've had it for about that long. But I've fished since 1970, though.
Why do people name their boats?
Well, usually the original names are done by the builders.
Oh, the people who built the boat. Oh, okay.
Well, the people who have them built by a builder.
Okay.
And either for the family or somebody, their mom, their sister, their child they lost or something to that effect. And, you know, they choose to name it. And then if the boat's sold down the line, the new owner has the opportunity to rename it again.
Does that usually happen, or do they tend to keep the original name?
Sometimes I bought a boat who wanted from a person in Half Moon Bay, and he wanted to keep the name, and I named the boat. I had to wait for my fourth child to be born to figure out what I was going to name the boat, and I had 3 girls, and we were waiting, and so the boy finally came, and we named the boat 3 Daughters. So Mark, my son Mark, was left out.
How long have you been fishing?
I actually started in 1970. My brother and I both got into it about the same time. And we have ancestors that came from Sicily and were in the fish business. And my dad fished when he was a young man and went to World War II and then came back and fished.
Now, did he fish out of Paducah Bay?
No, he didn't. He fished out of San Francisco. Okay. But he fished briefly. Uh-huh. And then he got into the produce business and then retired out of the produce business and got back into the fish business.
You hear a lot about how really dreadful, how times are really bad for fishermen in this area. It seems like ever since I've been here in Sonoma County, which is most of my life, that's what we've been hearing. Was there ever like just this booming time that you recall?
Well, yes, there has been some boom years. We had seasons of good herring catch, which was a very lucrative industry at one time. The herring was stripped of their roe, and the roe was shipped to Japan and was real high-end product for the Japanese people. We've had boom years in the crab business to where we had, 90 to 100,000 pounds of crab per boat. Some of the guys had, who work real hard. And there's been some salmon years. And that's why fishermen are eternal optimists, because they've always figured within a year or two something is going to turn around. This is, since I've been fishing, this is about the worst I've seen it for regulations. Some of us are over-regulated. Some of the industry is under-regulated. And so it really tends to, like, we're restricted now. If you haven't fished for a certain species, you have to have a permit to fish for the certain species.
For specifics.
Yes, uh-huh. for specifics, such as rock cod or halibut and stuff like that. It's called limited entry. And if you hadn't had any landings prior to the initiation of limited entry, you're out. So you're basically restricted to what you can do right now.
So if you've never caught a halibut before commercially, you can't.
Well, it's going into it. Uh-huh. Yeah, that way. And also, if you have the limited entry in the crab business, you have to buy a permit off a boat, or you have to buy the boat with
an existing
permit. Yes,
is that sort of like liquor licenses?
It's similar. Yeah. It's similar to it. You have to buy an established permit.
Right.
So it makes it really hard for young people to get into the industry. I have a son that's just turned 30, and he built a boat for at least 8-9 years on his own. And he now he's limited to what he can fish.
Excuse me. I have a little cold here every now and then. It takes my breath away. I think a lot of people make the assumption that every difficulty that a fisherman is having has to do with overfishing. It's like, okay, we took all the sardines. Okay, we took all the salmon. Okay, we took all the crab. It's a little more cyclical than that, isn't it?
Yeah, in crabs it is. What we've suffered in the past is that we're reactive instead of proactive. And what we have going now is I have to contribute part of it to overfishing because it wasn't regulated properly. We suggest most of our regulations ourselves, and contrary to belief, we are ecologists in our own way. We want to have a sustainable industry to where we can continue on. Yeah, I mean, I hope I have some more years left in the business. My son, that's what he chose to do, and I just hope that we can get it regulated to where it's fair and equitable and still maintain a sustainable fishery. It's really hard right now to pinpoint one problem that caused it all, and it's definitely not overfishing. It has something to do with it, but basically there's abundance of problems that we have to address.
If you were to take all of the problems, sort of the human-generated problems out of the picture, what sort of cycles would we see? Let's take Dungeness crab, because it's Dungeness crab season.
Well, Dungeness crab... with that happens right now that it is cyclical somewhat, and the cleaning of San Francisco Bay and the estuaries has a lot to do with it. So that is a positive. Most of the time it runs about a 7-year cycle, and a crab from the time of when they're hatched, which are millions, to the time they're marketable is about 3 years. So if we overfish a year, we have a lot of pressure, right? For instance, right now in District 10, which is from Point Arena all the way to the Mexican border. And that's where we're trying to address that problem now by trap limits. So we don't want to have a bottom of the cycle as we're experiencing now. This is about the worst year I've seen in many, many years as far as production of the crab. We had a lot of heavy fishing in the last spring that it hurt us for this opener. A lot of guys, because of the lack of salmon season, they had no other choice. Most of the time, about March, during a normal year, the end of March, most of the crabbers are out of the water. Uh-huh. And they're preparing for salmon. Being the last 2 years that we had no salmon, we had a tremendous amount of pressure here in District 10. So that contributed to some of the poor season that we're having now.
Mm-hmm. So you take them out in March. You take out in March what you might typically take out the following November, so that makes a dip in the November season?
Yeah. What we do is we'll be taking November's crab, basically. Uh-huh. And, you know, our family always fished till the end, but most of the fishermen would fish salmon, and they would be out of the water by the end of April. And it would just leave the grounds for very few crabbers. And I didn't specialize in salmon fishing much, so I'd go salmon fishing, but my family specializes in crab, so we stayed always till the end.
Okay. We're going to hear more about crab fishing with Tony Anello after a musical break. You are listening to Mouthful. It is, I think it's the third day of Christmas. Did y'all know that? But also the third day of Christmas, Shelley.
Really?
Yeah, because the first day of Christmas is December 25th. Have you heard of Twelfth Night?
Yes.
Okay, Twelfth Night is the 12th day of Christmas. So this whole thing of counting down, you know, the shopping days has nothing to do with the actual 12 days of Christmas. It's and that, I believe, goes back to the pagan celebrations that occurred around the 1st of January in through the 6th of January. By that time, you can actually tell that the days are getting longer again. So it's really the season is all about light. And I think that's, other than the Dungeness crab, that's one of the best things about it. The best thing about it is light, beautiful light, light in the darkness. And, of course, that also resonates with the meaning of Hanukkah. So there you go, a little diversion from the topic at hand, which is a Dungeness crab in Bodega Bay and beyond. I'd like to do a little bit in the day in the life of a crab fisherman during crab season. What time of day do you go out when you go? What does it mean to go out? What do you do when you go out?
Well, we could start from the preparation stage. Usually we'll start around the end of August and September, preparing the gear. Every year we go through the traps and repair them.
And describe a trap. What does a trap look like?
Well, we call them crab pots is the common name for them. They're anywhere from 33 to 40 inches in across. They're a circle with stanchions about 12 inches high. There's two rings, and there's 12-inch stanchions that go around. So you come up with a pot-looking
sort of looks like a great big basket.
It's somewhat of a basket is what it is. There's a lid on the top that opens with stainless wire hooks. And the crab trap is welded out of rebar, 5/8 rebar, and then they have weight irons in them, which are about 18 to 24 inches long, and the weight irons are about an inch to an inch and a half in diameter. They go across the bottom of the trap. The trap is welded and then rubber wrapped with inner tube that's been cut up into about an inch and a half strips. Then they're hand woven with 0.40 stainless steel wire. And the tunnels are put in out of 3/16 to 1/4 inch.
Tunnels.
That's where the crab will come in to enter and to get the bait. And those tunnels we have what we call triggers. Triggers are made out of thin stainless steel wire in their spring. So the crab comes in to get the bait, and then he can't get out. Now, in the trap, we have 4-inch escape rings, 4 1/4-inch escape rings. Those are mounted on the side of the trap, and they're also welded into the trap. They'll let the sublegal crabs that are less than 6 1/4 inches escape. Also, we incorporated it, and this was done by fishermen. We now have what they call a destruction device. A destruction device consists of cotton. It's a fine cotton twine, and it's usually woven into the pot, or it's attached to the hooks. So if the trap is lost due to natural causes such as storms or tugboats running them over or ships running through them, that if the pot is lost, that destruction device gives out within probably 2 to 3 weeks.
So that way the crabs inside can get out.
The trap doesn't continuously fish. Now that was put together by the fishermen themselves, uh-huh. And then it was incorporated by the Fish and Game as a requirement. Which we're trying to do certain things like that, uh-huh. To, you know, to keep the fishery alive.
So you start working on these crabs in August, September?
So some of the gentlemen work on them. It depends on how amount of gear. Some people put the traps away, and they work on them just as they're putting them away for the storage for the summer. We're always running behind a month or two, so we're working on them till the last day. So with that being done, the fisheries, some of the guys will buy new buoys and outfit new gear, and you lose about anywhere from 10 to 20% a year. Either by breaking them off or getting stuck in the sand, in the mud, or the ships and the kelp will drift them off over their heads, so to speak, where there's not enough buoy line, and then they'll be lost basically until either another trap wraps around or they'll pick them up in a dragnet. So with that going on, we prepare, and the most hectic time is about a week before the season opens. There's guys running around there working all the way through the night, stacking their boats with gear, and it's kind of an exciting time. And then we wait for about a week before to negotiate a price.
Oh, so you negotiate the price before you go out?
Normally we do. And what happens there is most of the time we don't come to an agreement. And I'd say at least 60 to 70% of the time we're waiting past the opening day to agree on a price. And that.
And why is that? What's the mechanics of that?
Well, that's something that I don't quite understand. And I've been in the business since 1970. Logically, you would think you'd have a price settled on the amount of crab that's predicted to be caught. And most of the time, they don't settle up until either a week or 2-3 days before, if they do settle at all. That's something I don't understand, why they don't do that. When I was close to a big wholesaler in town here in Santa Rosa, we suggested to get a price settled so he can go and probably get ads out into the large supermarkets. Then you know you got a set price. But that doesn't happen too often.
And when you're talking about setting a price, you're talking about the wholesale price, not the price that people see in markets
sort of thing. No. We're talking about we like to have a price, that an ex-vessel price, to the boat itself.
Okay.
So we'll give you an example. Say that you go for $2 a pound on the crab. Then you have your cost of your bait and your fuel and your crew, and then you subtract all that, and that's your profit. But going to the other end, that crab has to go through a number of hands. He goes through the receiver, and the receiver takes a cut. Then it goes to the wholesaler, and he takes the cut. Then it goes to the retailer, and they take the cut. Now, we, as fishermen, we understand that everybody needs everyone. Some of the fishermen are going direct, such as my brother right now. He's going direct to the public because of the sad season that we're encountering. Uh-huh. And normally he sells to me. I'm also a lightweight broker. I'll handle 3-4 boats and I'll deliver to the Bay Area. But it gets to a point now that we're fishing in desperation.
Uh-huh.
But that's getting ready. It's kind of exciting.
Yeah. So when you get ready, what are you going to do? When it's like, okay, the whistle blows, the season's on, what is it like when you go out? What happens?
Well, you normally set 6 a.m. before the opening season of the season. Say the season starts at the 15th of November, which is what it starts now. Used to be the second Tuesday in November years ago. So we would go out and set the gear 6 a.m. on the 14th. And when then any time after midnight, you can go and start to run the gear.
So, and run the gear means harvest.
Harvest the crab. We set them out in strings that go from anywhere from 20 pots to out to 100 pots long, depending upon the preference of the fisherman. And we'll continuously we'll be moving ahead when we run that gear. We'll be moving from one trap to the next. We'll put the rope in what we call a power block, hydraulically driven friction pull device, and we'll gather up the rope and throw the buoy out behind us, and we're moving ahead all the time. So we'll come up to the next trap. When that trap comes aboard, we'll take the legal crabs out, deposit the sublegals back into the ocean, and then we'll as soon as the buoy is right before the bow of the boat, we'll dump that trap in and move on to the next. Most of the time on a good boat, you can run a trap about once every minute and 15 seconds.
Wow.
Yeah, and some of the bigger guys can really move. They got it down to poetry and motion. But my son on the boat and myself and my brother, we can move a lot of gear in one day.
And do you usually go out, if you can go out midnight after, you know, as soon as it opens, is it traditional to go out in the dark, or do you go out?
Well, it depends on where your gear's located. Okay. And depending on the weather conditions. If the weather is questionable, we'll wait till daylight and take a good look at it. I mean, there's no need jeopardizing your safety and the safety of your crew. You know, at least that's the way I look at it.
Sounds wise.
Well, that's why I'm still here, thank God.
How long are you out, say, on the Annabelle?
On the Annabelle, I'm a day fisher. I'll run. We'll get out in the morning early, just about daylight, and we'll be back in right about dark. So, you know, you're good 12 to 14 hours on my boat. Now, some of the other guys, the bigger boats, will run around the clock and make two-day trips. My son, he'll run two-day trips. My brother will run one-day trips. Go with smaller boats. But some of the larger boats will have two crews on, and they'll just keep going 24 hours a day until their holes are full.
So they take turns sleeping?
Yes.
That sort of thing?
Yeah, yeah.
And it seems like the cabin, is that the right term? The cabin of the boat, the crab boats, it's not very big. So what do you take with you to eat, drink, that sort of thing?
Just normal groceries. You know, it depends.
Do you have a galley?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, most of the boats are equipped with the galley, you know, unless you're real small. We'll throw roast in the oven, and it's a diesel stove, and it's continuously going, and it's keeping the cabin warm, or we'll cook something up that's frozen, or, you know, usually the captain's the cook, and while the guys are either sorting crabs or you're taking a little break, the captain will put something together and feed the crew.
I would imagine in that weather, and that hard work, you get really hungry when you're out there.
Well, my crew continuously eats.
Oh.
They'll eat. We'll run from one string to the other, and while they'll get the crab sorted out and the bait made, and then they'll be in the cabin rummaging through the groceries. And sometimes it's $60 to $80 a day on food for these guys.
Cool.
Yeah, and it's they tend to eat well.
And then so you go out just for a day, sunrise to sunset, and then is it daily? Is it every other day, third day?
That also depends on how much product is available. Uh-huh. If you're getting good product, you'll go every day. If sometimes we'll soak them 72 hours, 3 days.
Uh-huh.
That's by law, we're supposed to tend our traps every 72 hours, weather permitting, so that's what we'd like to do.
Uh-huh. Now, we've had a bunch of storms here the last couple of weeks. What happens during storms? Are you just not able to get out?
Well, it depends on how tough you are. Okay. If you want to, you know, it depends on how much product is available. Some guys will fish some pretty tough weather. My son being one of them, he scares me. Normally, you know, the storms will just sit them out and just hope that we don't lose too many traps. The traps do either drift off or get buried. And if they get buried, we have to go out. And if they're really severely buried, we'll go out with a fire pump on board the boat. And we'll send a line down with a nozzle on it. And then we'll pump them out of the sand. So there's a lot to it.
Wow, there is. Do you know there was this much to do with Dungeness crab fishing? The details always fascinate me.
They do it down on canvas sands, they do it at Waikiki. Lazing about the beach all day at night, the crickets creeping.
crab, fishing. Where am I? What day is this? How far out do you go? You know, that's something that I think that's important, right, when it comes to any fish. Like you sort of, you can say, like, the sand dab, for example, is real close to the shore. Am I right?
Well, yes. Certain times of the year they are.
Yeah. So where do you go to get the crab?
Crabs could start from anywhere from 20 feet of water all the way out to, which would be fathoms, which would be out to 100 fathoms. So we've been as far as 18 miles straight out.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
18 miles out.
Yeah. And our range generally is from my boat fishes from Point Reyes up to Salt Point, uh-huh, which is a span of about 35, 40 miles.
Uh-huh. And in an average day, say going out at sunrise, coming in at dusk, how many miles do you cover?
Well, we could cover up to 40 miles.
Oh, you can? Okay.
Yeah, 40, 50 miles, depending upon where we have the gear. My boat only runs about 7.5 to 8 knots tops, and so I'm limited to the areas where I can fish in a day.
Uh-huh.
But it, usually Point Reyes is a real popular area for Bonita Bay fishermen and also for San Francisco fishermen.
Do you see each other when you're out there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you could be running right alongside of a guy 200 yards away. Uh-huh. He'll have a string right next to yours. Sometimes we're tangled up, and you know, the courtesy part of it would be to untangle and you know, to not damage the other guy's.
So y'all help each other.
Pretty much. Bodega Bay and San Francisco, Half Moon Bay, and north, and Fort Bragg all the way up. Fishermen are generally, you know, they if you're down, broke down, they're going to help you.
Uh-huh.
And if they find one of your stray traps, you have a name tag in the trap.
So they are marked.
Yeah. They're voluntarily marked on the trap itself. The buoys have to have a number that's your license number, your L number. Mm-hmm. That's for the person who's fishing that trap. And it's a permit fishery. The boat has the permit, and you have to renew the permit every year by paying your fish and game license.
Uh-huh.
So they're very courteous to each other most of the time. We have pirates once in a while.
You're anticipating my next question.
Yeah, I'm reading your mind.
What's a Dungeness crab pirate? What's the story?
Well, there's... It's lucky they don't take your trap, but most of the time they'll run your gear.
That means they'll pull up your trap.
They'll pull
and
your
take
trap,
your catch.
Take the catch out. It doesn't happen too often, but it does happen from time to time.
Do you catch them?
Well, for their sake, we hope we don't catch them.
So, is it something that happens every year, but just a little bit, or does it only happen?
It happens from time to time.
Just from time to time.
Yeah, you know. It happened a couple times this year, we know of.
Uh-huh.
Usually the sportsmen will come out and say, oh, the commercial guys are running our traps. And they use a little common sense. We're running 300-400 traps of our own. We're not going to mess with your sport traps.
Yeah.
You know, we wouldn't do it anyway.
Now, the sports fishermen, there's a couple companies, it seems, that, you know, you pay them your money and you go out for a day.
Yeah.
And you get... You know, you come home with anywhere from 0 to 12 crab or something. You have to buy a license. Can you talk about that at all?
Yes, I can, because I initiated it.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. Well, I took a leave of absence from my main job at the uh-huh. time. I was a firefighter. And after the earthquake, I didn't want to see any more carnage. So I took a little time off. And
The 89 earthquake?
Yeah, 80. Loma Prieta.
Loma Prieta, yeah.
So I was still fishing all during that time, but I decided to go into the charter boat business, and it was highly competitive. So we come up with an idea. My wife actually came up with the idea. She said, why don't you take people out crab fishing? I said, well, I don't know how that's going to work. So we put our heads together, and she came up with the basics of the idea, and I put it together. So we started an industry where we take people out, and we had a combination trip where we had... we'll take you out, set the traps in the morning, and take you out rock cod fishing, bottom fishing, get your limit of bottom fish, and then come back and run the traps. And originally, I assigned a trap to every person that was on the boat. And since then, it's evolved into something different. But that's how I started it. And it took off, and then some other boats jumped into the business. So we voluntarily dropped the limit from 10 sport crabs to 6 sport crabs. Uh-huh. And I wanted to see the size limit raised to a market crab size was 6 1/4. You're taking sub-legal crabs. You're taking crabs that don't breed. I haven't seen a crab in all my years fishing that's been mating with a female crab under 6 inches. They're usually 6 1/4 up that are doing the mating. So I would like to see that, and we're going to work on that problem. We're going to work on raising the size limit for the sport industry.
Uh-huh. Is that sport industry still in full swing out there?
Well, yes, they tried very hard, and they're also hurting because, you know, there's no product out there to speak of. So there's not a lot of enthusiasm to go fishing. When they're catching good product, naturally they'll get a lot of customers. And they're working with us. We want to do some combination of things together on the sport industry and the commercial industry to, you know, to make a viable fishery. Uh-huh. And also sustainable fishery that could continue on.
Now, when people go, you know, out to Bodega Bay or to Fisherman's Wharf, wherever, there's always a lot of crab. Can we talk about that?
There's always a lot of crab because now, you know, from New Westport, Washington to down to the Bay Area is only about 16 hours. So, you know, they're trucking crabs from the north, and they have a wide range of an area they can service. Even last week, believe it or not, I had to get crab for my little shop out there in Bodega Bay from Westport, Washington, because my son couldn't make it out, and my brother couldn't make it out, and so we had to have crab for the Christmas holiday. So we the guy that I sell to down in San Jose, I had to buy crab from him that came in from Westport, Washington. Uh-huh. And our crab in Sonoma County and Mendocino County, Marin, is far superior than the northern crab. So you'll see a lot of crab, very reasonable, on the market, and that is from the north. And you'll see the difference between the local Dungeness and the northern Dungeness.
Would you describe that difference?
Well, first of all, the crabs are smaller from the north. Uh-huh. Because there's an abundance of crab, and their body cavities are not filled with meat because there's abundance of crab up there, so they have to share the food source on the uh-huh. bottom, so they don't fill out as much. And they're smaller because it's different year class up there. And the crabs that we get down here right now are on the top end of the year class, which means they're basically going to die soon if we don't harvest them.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So they're
really about
4 years. Oh,
okay. 4 year cycle tops. And right now we have our crabs are averaging better than 2 pounds, 2 1/4 all the way up to almost 3 pounds. Uh-huh. And they're completely full of meat.
Yeah, the ones I got from your brother and sister-in-law for New mm-hmm. Year's Eve or Christmas Eve, those were some big boys.
Yeah.
They were meaty and they were good.
Well, that's why we have to, you'll see them advertised in certain markets for a reasonable price. But, you know, you're going to get what you pay for right now. Uh-huh. You come out to Bodega Bay, you're going to pay a little higher for your crab, but you're going to get the highest quality you can get at this point in time. We're going to see, God willing, in the next 2 years, we're going to see an increase of crab in our area. There is a few crab that we see that are about 2 molts away, what we say about 2 years, possibly a year and a half away. And once we get into those, they're going to be just about legal size, and they're going to be a little bit smaller. And the quality, I don't know how it would be because I don't know if they're going to make the food source. Uh-huh. But we're optimists. We're hoping that we can survive through these lean times and get some volume within the next 2 years.
Now, it seems that one of the ways you all survive is the popularity of the Spud Point Crab Shack.
Well,
that place, I took some students out there, I guess it was towards the end of November. I think it was the Saturday after Thanksgiving. And there must have been 30, 40 people in line. There's just a line that snakes down the street.
Well, I have to contribute that to my wife. Yeah,
Carol's famous clam chowder, her famous crab cakes.
She has discovered, she's put this together, and it was our idea. But she's the cook. She and my daughter Lisa also. They uh-huh. put it all together, and we're very thankful. It's very successful. We established it as Spud Point Crab Company, and we originally were going to just sell, you know, just seafood products out of it. But she would start at the clam chowder, and it took off, and now the crab cakes took off. We have different variety of sandwiches, basically all has to do with crab. I have a few meat sandwiches for the non-crab.
Hot dogs.
Hot dogs are good. They're really good.
No problem with that.
Yeah, they're really good. And our tri-tip sandwiches are really good. That's a creation of mine.
Yeah, and she said some of that, the meat sandwiches, the hot dogs and stuff, is for the fishermen who come in.
Well, that was originally what we started it for. Uh-huh. And we have a following of fishermen that come down in the morning. And it's kind of neat because as soon as the door opens at 8:30, we have anywhere from 3 to 15 guys, depending on, you know, the weather and if they're out fishing or whatever else they have to do. But it's kind of neat in the morning. We all come down there and shoot the breeze, talk about war stories that we had in the past, which keeps our optimism alive. But
sure.
It's like, you know, living there and right across the street from my boats, it's just, you know.
Yeah, and you live right next door.
Right next door. Well, I was tired of the commute.
Yeah, it's a great setup. Tell me about the crab cakes. I have actually never had them because every time I get there, they're sold out.
Well, you got to call ahead.
Oh, okay. That's the secret.
Yeah. And if you catch her in the right mood. Today she was overloaded with crab cake orders. Or it was yesterday she was overloaded with crab cake orders. And I didn't want to go back in the kitchen. That's her own creation for sure. Everything is her own creation. Uh-huh. She didn't like to cook when she was younger. And she didn't like fish. But she ended up now being a chef, I call her. And my banker says she's worth about $7 million.
Well, she get her crab. There's that thing that goes on in Bodega, that contest.
Yeah.
Where, I forget what time of year it is.
It's usually in the spring.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Where all the participating restaurants, you buy a ticket, and then you go around and you taste, I don't know, 10, 12, 15 different types of clam chowder, and people vote on what's the best. You've won, hers has won at least the last 2 years.
3 years.
3 years.
And
in
the first year we participated, we came in second. Yeah, we're really proud of that.
Yeah, it's great clam chowder. And little Lucas has been eating it since he was 3. He's 7
oh,
now.
Cool.
He talks about it. He loves it.
Great, great.
So you're doing a little expansion there, right?
Well, actually, we were trying to do a little bit of expand the kitchen a little bit. Uh-huh. And we figured it through the rigmarole that we're going to just put a new stove in and a new hood.
Uh-huh.
And that'll increase our capacity to put out more product. Yeah, we're doing a little expansion, running into the normal permits through the county, the time, and this one here. Oh, you got to go back to this. Oh, you know, it's the same old thing everybody goes through.
Yeah.
Traps.
So how do you see the Bodega Bay fishing industry? If we look ahead 3, 4, 5 years, do you see it becoming more vibrant? What do you see happening?
Well, you know, we're so limited to what we can fish.
Are there just very specific things that you can take if you're docked at Bodega Bay?
Well, the majority of the fleet out of Bodega Bay are crabbers and salmon fishermen.
Anything else at all?
Very little.
Okay.
There's a few guys fishing deep water rock cod on experimental permit.
Uh-huh.
There's a guy that runs a trawl boat, and he is very limited what he can get out of Bodega Bay. Bodega Bay's industry is kind of stale right now between the regulations and no salmon. The majority of the fleet is salmon fleet, and 75% of the fleet is crabbers. So you got 25% that are just not doing anything. And the other 75% are crabbers, and most of the crabbers right now are bringing their gear in because of the lack of product, and you don't want to lose a $200 trap. You know, just trade traps for crabs, and if you're lucky, you're doing that.
Uh-huh.
So some of the guys that are hardcore, such as my son and my brother, are holding out. I didn't even put my gear in the water this year. I had 300 traps. They're still stacked out on dry land. I had the boat loaded, and another fisherman had his boat loaded, and we decided I was doing the testing for the fish and game and for the domoic acid, and what we seen was just very, very little product.
Uh-huh.
So by the time you set your gear out and you turn it over a few times, and the bait and the fuel and the crew, and if you lose a few traps, you're going backwards.
Yeah. And what is the bait for crab?
Well, the primary bait is squid. And we use a combination of squid and mackerel. And then if you did get some carcasses, if you're lucky enough to find some carcasses of fish that have been filleted, we call that hanging bait. We'll hang that in a trap. Uh-huh. And occasionally we'll use clams.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. So I have never used them. My son, he's an advocate of them. He uses them.
Uh-huh.
But they seem to last longer in the trap, he says. So they keep fishing after 3-4 days.
Uh-huh.
So it's pretty much an industry, though, that in 3 or 4 years, if there is enough product that we see coming within the next 2 years, we might rebound a little bit. We're hoping to. Uh-huh. And then the salmon, we hope that's rebounding in at least another year or so. So we're holding on. Luckily, most of the guys out in Bodega Bay own their boats outright. And
so people aren't going to be losing their boats.
They won't be losing them. Some might elect to sell, but I don't think so.
Uh-huh.
I mean, luckily, my son owns his. I own mine. My brother owns his. So it works out. But you still have to meet the bills, you know.
Yeah.
There's slip rent, there's insurance, there's upkeep on the boats are $3,000 to $5,000 a year, you know, depending on what you want to do with them. And the slip rents, you know, they mount up real quick.
Yeah. Now, we should mention your brother's boat, because that's one of the ways people can go and get.
Sure.
But it's the Robert Kroll, right?
Robert Kroll. And he's out on Sea Dock, and he usually sells. He is a very good producer, and he usually sells to me direct, and I ship to the Bay Area.
Uh-huh.
This year, there's so little of product available, he elected to sell off the boats, and he's building up a pretty good clientele. He'll sell on the weekends, and you'll have to check. They got. I don't have his number handy, but best thing to do would be to call.
Yeah, and people can send me an email. I should have brought the number with me. People can send an email. Probably the easiest one is catsmilk@sonic.net.
Oh, cool.
I will send you my crab Louis dressing recipe, as well as give you the number for the Robert Kroll.
Robert Kroll, Stevenello.
Yeah, it's really easy to get to the boat, and it's really fun to do.
Right.
You loaned me that jacket because I had not come prepared. But it's just, I mean, to me, that is so much the Sonoma that I love. I just love that part of it.
Well, we made a deal amongst ourselves. He doesn't sell cooked crab, and I don't sell live crab. So anybody who wants cooked crab comes out to our place, and then we direct them if they want live crab, go over and see my brother. Also, there's another guy out there that sells on Paisano Brothers.
Oh, Paisano Brothers is still selling.
Yeah, he sells on the weekend also. That's Rich Franceschi, my ex-partner.
Uh-huh.
And so we're all kind of working together. You know, when times are tough, you got to work together. And times are tough for everybody right now, but, you know, it's tough for us fishermen, too.
Yeah. So when you say you sell cooked crab, you sell whole cooked crab in addition to the prepared dishes, right?
Exactly. We sell whole cooked crab. And
yeah, you got that big steaming kettle right there.
Right. We cook our own crabs. You'll see them go in live and come out cooked, ready to go. And you can eat them right there at the place. And we provide certain amenities that for a little extra charge. And, you know, everything works out. We have people just having big crab feeds. Looks like a crab frenzy out there sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, do you like crab?
Yeah, I do. You know, it was kind of...
to get to that. You're not sick of it, huh?
No, I'm not. In fact, the other day, my wife and I ate our first crab for the season. And we had three big jumbles. And we tore into those, and they were just unbelievably delicious.
Hot or chilled?
We usually eat ours chilled.
Me too.
Yeah.
That's the best.
We stop the cooking process, and we cook them depending upon how many are in the kettle. And we'll cook them for anywhere from 25 minutes to 40 minutes, depending on if there's a large cook, our kettle cooks.
Oh, that's right. You hold a whole lot.
Yeah, we hold about 50 pounds. And what we'll do is we'll chill them immediately, stop the cooking process. We'll put them in our chiller with ice, and it chills them immediately. And then we'll clean them there and go to town on them. That's what we did the other night. And boy, what a nice glass of wine and some French bread.
There are few things that are better.
Oh,
that's the quintessential winter meal.
Exactly, exactly. I did. That's why we're still in business, thank God.
Now, can we touch at all just a little tiny bit? Are there other varieties of... Are there species of crab that are fished from the Pacific waters here?
Well, naturally, there's the Alaskan varieties.
Yeah, and there's which I know just kink, the big giant spider-like
There's a pilo. There's Dungeness up there in Alaska. Yeah. There's king crab. There's a couple other varieties. Out here, the primary crab is Dungeness. There is rock crab fishery down south. There was somewhat of a small rock crab fishery here years ago. That's another thing that does it's not very lucrative. And then also there's a deep water crab, which my brother was getting mixed in with his product out there, was what we call a box crab. And they look like a rock.
Really?
Yeah, and they're really interesting crab. And he was selling those crab, and the meat is just really sweet. They don't have enough meat to really do a commercial end of it, uh-huh. but, you know, to process for crab meat. But there is enough to, for, you know, if you just want to have a crab feed, uh-huh. they're edible.
I've never heard of them.
Yeah, they're really good. I used to get them when I was a trawl fisherman with my bottom net. Uh-huh. And then he ventured out way out in the deep, and that's where they hang out, and he gets them mixed in with his Dungeness.
Okay, well, Tony, thank you so much. Tony Anello, it is the Spud Point Crab Company, and it is the Annabelle. You'll find them out at on Bay Flat Road. You can't miss it. You just keep driving like you're going to Bodega Head, and there it is. And you can find Tony's brother and sister-in-law. That's Steve and Kathy. Uh-huh. Yeah, Steve and Kathy Anello. You just look for the dock that says she. And I think they're the first or second boat.
First boat on the left.
Yeah, and they have a sign that says Live Dungeness Crab. So there you go. It's a great excursion for this time of year. It's something really special about Sonoma County. And on that note, it is the last mouthful of 2008. Hope you have a great start to 2009. Want to join me in saying good riddance 2008 and all that went with it that we didn't love. Looking forward to all kinds of wonderful things, including I think we should all have a luau early in the year. I'm planning a January 20th breakfast luau. Perhaps we'll be talking about it before then. So meet me back here. I will not be here. Actually, next Sunday, we will have an archive show. I will be in New Orleans and in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. Be back here on January 10th with another episode of Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other.
Did you ever see a whale with a polka dot tail? Did you ever see a man with eight fingers on his hand? Did you have to dry your eye when you saw that puppy fly? Oh no, tell me it ain't so.
Mouthful is hosted and produced by Michelle Anna Jordan. Lawrence Alberti is Mouthful's engineer. For more information about Mouthful, send an email to catsmilk@sonic.net. That's catsmilk@sonic.net. You can also download Mouthful's free podcast at krcb.org or from iTunes.
And the moral of this story, well, children, it is plain but true. God knows if a preacher preaches long enough, even he'll get hungry too, and he'll sing.